There's a lot of material. You'll find it with Antares, and I sent that to you this evening. There's a lot of material.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's, this one is the what I think is the most hardcore one of all the Stella codes.
I don't know what you mean by hardcore.
Intense. You know, this is the first of the in the cycle of the Light Warrior.
I see.
And as a matter of fact, for those who haven't who started and haven't had a one of the other two cords, the Light Weaver or the Light Maker.
Yeah.
Then we end up doing something that we refer to as the Pegasus Bridge, which compensates for the things that aren't there, because it's fairly to start with Antares without anything else
it's really tough,
challenging.
Yeah, it's really tough because with Antares you are going, you know, it's better to have first, because the first one is Cyrus, as I said, is the first stage where you have the anchoring of the energy of Christ consciousness. Then you have Spica, which is the energy of the mother. So this, after Spica, you experience the first balance of the polarities. You know what you call the sacred marriage inside, the male and the female energy, the divine energy, male, female, becoming one. So it's an alchemical process.
And I was going to say, whereas you can start the stellar codes at any time, probably the best place would be to start with Cyrus because of this.
It is the best place. But, you know, the Antares is very intense because it's the first Light Warrior, like Chris said, but it's the first point where you are starting to deal with your internal shadows. What is not perfected on you. And it's better when you have already anchored the both energies of the male and the female inside, and you have more, I would say, grounding to start doing the alchemization, because Antares is the heart of Scorpio. Scorpio is a water sign, but is a hot water sign. So is the boiling water that, you know, that makes, you transform the internal liquid in the internal spiral, my accent, internal spiral, which is our blood and all the liquids of in our body, to really boil, to take it out, everything that is not purified, that's short of our true essence. So this is where we look at our imperfections, our what we need to be corrected, and then we do this, and specifically through the cleansing of the chakras, more detail way as you see in a manual. It's a very particular techniques. They are particular techniques, but also is the starter point for the cleansing of the bloodline, you know, for the bloodline, inheritance, your DNA inheritance.
It's what we have with and before I get into this thing, let me just point out, it's interesting you're talking about boiling and things like that, because in various cultures throughout history, Antares, the heart of the scorpion, has been known as the fire star. So when you start talking about heat and boiling, there is a lot of references to it. But what I was going to say about the ancestral healing is we offer this as a package, but it's based on the work that we do here in the Stellar Codes over three different codes. What we do with the ancestral healing is bring this together as a package, and with a little more oomph. But it's the groundwork is all laid within these codes, and Antares is the first of those.
Yes.
What keeps coming to my mind is that as I go over this information and read it, is how did you manage to collect all of this information? There's so much. It seems like you have to be about 5,000 years old to just collect all this and put it together.
Well, the information has been out there for a long time. If you take a look at our oldest known religious texts, which are the pyramid texts, are about 2,500 B.C., and they talk about some of what we deal with here. For instance, my favorite quote from them is, "I am a soul, I am a star of gold." And you learn a little bit more about that in one of the next stellar codes, which is Orion, which was that particular constellation, actually was the constellation Osiris, but which has the references for the pyramid texts. But it's the information has been around for a long time.
And this story has been told, you know, again and again, many times in many different schools of knowledge. What happened is that everybody on the past wanted to have their own, you know, different school. So they got the material, which was unified. It was almost like a manual of ascension. So mankind always had this. And those are techniques that they're simple, you know what I mean? It's like you don't need to jump in one foot and breathe with the left, you know, nostril, and close one eye and put the other eye up, and you know, you don't need
We're not doing the breaths of Merkaba.
Yeah, you know. Well, it's natural, but is with a series of techniques, they're not impossible, but always existed in every school of antiquity. Since the start of the organized religions, those things were taken off. With a purpose. The purpose, basically, I'm not going to, you know, those conspiracy theories, but the purpose, basically, was the manipulation of people. I would say I would prefer to go much more towards a line of a social manipulation than necessarily a spiritual manipulation per se. I say social manipulation because people that are disempowered are easier commanded and, you know, broken down without confidence or without knowing who they are or what their purpose. They're manageable. So I prefer to give this, you know, the reason this information was dismantled through time, in my point of view, was much more an economical and social phenomena than necessarily a spiritual phenomena, even though the spiritual cause, the spiritual side effect is one that we resent up today.
I agree. You know, throughout history, there's been and I think that this applies here, there's been a balance between spirituality and between religions. They are similar, but they're not really the same. If I had to define the difference between them, I would say that religion tends to require an intercessor or an intermediary between the supplicant and the divine. Whereas with spirituality, there is no intermediate. You connect directly to the divine. I think this is what probably happened with some of the stellar codes at some point in time. It became a way of raising stock or some kind of control for, as Liani said, socio or economic gain.
But it has been there, you know. You have old texts of the Upanishads. He talks about the origin, divine origin of man, and why is the purpose, and of course in the language that the people of the area or their people would understand. You know, so this is something that was reproduced with the following of the Egyptian, basically the Egyptian Chaldaic system of religion. you know, most of the knowledge was resorted to India to be preserved.
What about the empowerment symbols? How far back do those go?
The empowerment symbols?
Those symbols are very old.
I don't necessarily have a way of dating those. You know, if you take a look at in this particular code, for instance, you know, some of the symbols are more well known than others. If you take a look in this particular code, and you take a look at what we have with the Antares Aldebaran code, or what we refer to when you look at your book, you'll see this symbol in this particular code, you know, in Stone Age carving, you know, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably these codes are prehistory. Some of the codes like Cyrus, there's certain universal codes that are out there that you'll see.
Are they like archetypical codes?
They're archetypical, and they are not. Because some of those codes, when you see those walls and the pyramids and those hieroglyphs,
right,
you know, you see some of the representations, and you see those codes impressed on their garment. You know, most of the gods and goddesses of ancient Egypt, or even Sumerian gods, they have those codes imprinted on their clothing, sometimes on their, for the codes that are more for the warrior, you see on their, you know, their sword.
Or their armor.
On in their armor. You know, you do have, you know, like the Stella codes are 12 codes. Nine codes.
Nine that are taught with the personal matrix mastery.
And the master
and
one.
Three additional ones that are done with the teaching mastery.
Each right. one of them correspond to one class of angels. And basically right now, for instance, if you look at the garment, the official garment of the ancient...
You're going to talk about the ancient Israelites?
Israelites.
The Hebrews.
The Hebrews. But they had,
a breastplate.
High priest.
The high priest would have a breastplate. Device or decoration on it. Wasn't really a breastplate per se, because it wasn't intended to stop a weapon.
Yes.
But it was, think of it as like a large medallion that literally covered the entire chest.
With 12 precious stones. And each one of those stones had one code. And each one of the codes corresponded at one archangel.
You know, there's a lot of symbolism in 12, you know, going back through this. You know, you take a look at this particular case with the ancient Hebrew priests. There are the 12 tribes of Israel. There's a reason there were 12 tribes. You know, it all goes back to this number. And it went from beyond there, because the Hebrews brought this out of Egypt.
Well, there's just so much here to learn.
Keep in mind that learning is a lifetime process. What we're giving you is a crash course.
Yeah.
And the tools. And from this, you will, you know.
That's your toolbox.
Yeah, you know, this is your toolbox. But the stellar codes really are a spiritual path. And there's techniques we teach here that are taught in other spiritual paths or in other schools of mystery. But you will find that if you look into the mystic religion or mystic aspects of various religions, mystic Christianity, mystic Judaism, which is, you know, Kabbalah, mystic Islam, which is Sufism. We don't really have a special name for mystic Christianity, do we?
No, it's just mystic.
You know, if you take a look at, like, for instance, Tibetan Buddhism, you will find that there are certain practices, certain techniques, certain meditations that are virtually identical. And as a matter of fact, what's interesting is you will find that the names are very close to each other, because there is a common root that may not be evident or historically documented, because, you know, historical records don't go that far.
But they're there.
But they do. No. There does seem to be a common root to these.
Well, yeah, but there are only so many things you can do with your breath.
There's
a lot of things you can do with your breath.
Oh my God, you have no idea.
But I see common threads between what's taught through, you know, the from India and the Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita and what they teach in terms of pranayama there, and some of the things that you've offered, you know, through your programs are, you know, they're very similar. And
yes,
and
there are.
They are very similar.
As a matter of fact, there are some that are identical.
Yeah, because they are the techniques that were preserved.
You know, it's not that it, you know, we didn't invent or the stellar codes. We, you know, this isn't we made this up. You know, we
but
pulled it together from a bunch of sources, slapped a New Age name on it, and like ran with it. You know, we came up with the term stellar code because of traditionally what this came from, and we were really hesitant about talking about this at first. I think it was the second or third teleconference, Liani, where we finally fessed up and mentioned stellar cult. Because we don't like that term. You know, cult now has a denomination of, you know, like Jonestown. Everyone's going to drink the Kool-Aid, right?
Right,
But the stellar cults were pre-religion, if you want to call it that, or pre-organized religion, beyond any religion that we have today. Early man set his calendar not by the sun, not by the moon. He set the calendar by the stars. And all the important, you know, functions and cycles and everything during the year were based on the position of various stars in the sky. These were the earliest stellar cults. You know, we talk about Sirius, you know, the dog star. This was the first of the code in this particular cycle, or we'll just say the top of the wheel. But you go back through Egypt. I mean, this was a particular thing, and you counted on certain things happening during this time period. And you'll find these common threads throughout all the civilizations, you know, all early, you know, civilizations out there, particularly involving the harvest and the planting cycles, because those were critical to the survival of man.
So they are there, but at the same token, they were auspicious periods, you know, to doing certain stuff, and that was the function of the astrologers. You know, nowadays you talk about fixed stars, which are the suns outside our, you know, solar system, and most astrologers,
they don't touch them.
They don't touch them. You know, they just like, they want to play with the planets. Oh, Mars is doing this, Venus is doing that. When, okay, I understand the internal, the planets of this solar system have some influence over the personality. But the movement of the soul, evolution, ascension, enlightenment is done through the major movement
of
the fixed stars, which are a macrocosmos, not the micro ones.
You know, it's the difference between the fixed stars. You think of the evolution of the soul. The wanderers or the planets think of the evolution of the ego, which is our
expansion, you know,
our physical body. Our
personality. So.
Well, you put it together in a way that sort of unifies, you know, a lot of different perspectives. And, you know, even though not all the information in the universe is available, but the unification of it, you know, is certainly presentable and understandable and encourages, you know, further investigation and study, which is really what it's all about.
Well, the fact is one, after, you know, and we have this with the last class, the people that completed the year cycle of the stellar codes. And it's incredible how their lives shifted. And
I can feel it already. I mean, I my perspective is already, you know, or altering, and certainly not a lot. But I can feel just some differences in the way I see things just from, like, the first two stellar codes that I've studied. And, it's interesting, you know, how that works.
It is a very intense process because it's all, again, is the alchemy of the soul. You are re-engineering your soul. You know what I mean? It's like really taking things and eliminating. What we do with the attunements is what we do basically is you introduce us inside of your system through the entombments. This the entombment comes and you facilitate something, you know, and we know when people did not do much of the exercises because it's harder. You know, it's what you do when you do the entombments, you loosen up the material. So it's easier for us to go and, you know, I would say harmonize the vibrations and then give the start it up so you can assimilate what is the lesson and basically the integration of the code, you know.
Right, and the big thing I notice is Dreamtime presentations or Dreamtime experiences after, you know, the codes are absorbed. There's change in that area.
Oh yeah.
Are you keeping a notebook?
No, I'm not keeping a notebook. I've never been really good at it. I memorize it. I remember these things, and I keep them, you know, with me. But I mean, it's just really, you know, it's startling sometimes just what comes up.
Oh, yes.
It can be very startling what comes up. And one of the things we recommend for people keeping notebooks is they can jot down so they can remember better.
And they will see, you will see through your dreams how much it opens and how much you have more control in the end of the stellar codes. You will see that you are a completely different person. I mean, not that we're washing your brain, but you're going to be more in control of your dreams. You will be able easily to feel things that, you know, like, for instance, you will know right away if somebody's lying to you. You know,
I've been good at that for a long time already.
You know, it's a vibration thing.
It's a vibration, though, you know, sensitivity. You get, it's almost like you clean up all your antennas and you're able to perceive clearly.
And you can feel the energy and vibrations of people.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly, when they get within 10 feet of you, you can tell, you know, how close you want them to get to you and how close you don't want them to get to you. You know, you can feel the energy of people that are around you all the time.
Yeah. Well, I that's the biggest, you know, change. The other biggest change is the capability, because you do have, with those codes, you know, every time we do that, every time we go in and we attune you, we, you know, remove another layer of your pineal gland, you know, the crust, you know, or the pseudo calcification of the pineal gland. So we like give a little tap there. When you finish that, you are able not only to do all those things of lucid dreaming or you know, astral traveling or things like that, but you are automatically will feel an extra ability to learn things easier. It opens one section of your brain, you know, that's like a complete different, a complete clean slate, you know, that you can, it's a new storage, and it's easier to learn, it's easier to understand, the words will come easier, because, you know, what you're doing actually is upgrading. So, you're upgrading
people,
go ahead.
Showing up in my dreams that are teachers, that are trying to teach me things while I'm asleep.
Yes.
And in you know, unexpected ways, and that, you know, there's actually something going on in a different
level.
There is. And,
yeah.
I'm sure that they've been there all along, but they're at least making themselves, you know, present.
Well, you're just perceiving them.
Yeah. Well,
you know, it's
true.
Not that they're not making their presence. They're constant on that. It's you that have the ability or not to perceive them.
Well, it's changing. It's changing.
Yes. Well, we know what the change basically is now that you are able to interact with them.
And that's the idea, I guess.
Yes, and to retain the memory that you were there, because most of us have, you know, a double life. I mean, you know, we are human beings during the day, and we are souls that go out and learn and travel and visit. And
we're multidimensional beings. It's
so, but most of the problem is that we don't retain the memory of it.
And this is one of the reasons I was asking about the dream journal. You find that it's once you do this and you start doing this on a regular basis, it's almost like your subconscious mind will say, hey, whoa, someone's paying attention. Let me, you know, be more active with that. And then you start remembering more, retaining more, having more lucid dreams, and learning how to act and interact within those dreams. So you become more of an active participant, as opposed to, you know, big going along for the ride.
Yes.
Well, that's something for me to work on and perfect. I and probably should, because there are times when I first wake up, say, in the middle of the night, I have access to the impact or power of the dream probably for about 30 seconds.
Yes. That's a trick.
During that 30-second period, what you want to say is, memento, memento, memento.
And what does that? What is that?
That will freeze the memory inside of your brain.
Well, I need. I'll remember
for
that
a longer period of time.
Yeah, for a longer period of time.
I'll try that, because sometimes I really have to focus and force myself not to go back to sleep or forget what I'm experiencing, because if I don't, it disappears. I can feel the power of it. Or the intensity of it, but I can't remember the details of it if I don't really focus on doing that. In 30 seconds or so, it's gone. So
it's like the material of dreams just melt.
Yeah, that's exactly.
It's very ephemeral.
Yeah.
Melt is a good way to describe it.
It melts. It's almost like a spider web that got affected by a big snowstorm. It melts it.
You practice
the momentum. Momentum will freeze.
How do you spell it? Momentum or memento?
Momentum. Momentum.
Okay.
It's Latin.
It's a Latin word, and she pronounces it better than I am.
Yeah, because, you know, I speak Portuguese, therefore I know Latin better. I don't know English, but I know Latin, which is a completely useless thing. I was obligated to learn Latin in school. So.
Well, it's come in handy with the different mystery schools.
Oh, yeah, it came a lot in handy.
I don't know anything about Latin at all, but I certainly don't have time to learn Latin, but there are aspects of it I can use, I'm sure.
Well, what you find is there's a power in Latin, but there's also a power in Greek. And some of that is because of, if you want to talk up a residual built-up effect, which is, you can refer to it as an egregora, in the sense that, you know, not many, more people had access to this information, used this knowledge, used this language, used this terminology, and built up a power to this, to the words. We don't necessarily have that in English per se, although you can use the English words. It just doesn't have the same effect.
Yes.
Because not enough people speaking English used it in this fashion to
with intention,
with the intention
in this. When you have like some of the, you know, some of the ancient invocations, they are either in Latin or in Greek or even in Sanskrit.
Or Sanskrit.
You know?
Sanskrit especially, and also Hebrew.
So what we have is, after you have a repetition of something in a liturgical way, and when I call about liturgical, I'm talking about rites, a ceremonial, which requires purification, requires a preparation of intention, and actually this will be the third article this week about elements of theurgy, which is the sacred space. You know, we talk about in two other articles that are all over the university. One is the prayers, the power of the prayer in itself, and the other, I think it's number one, number two. The number two is the power of evocations and invocations.
Yeah, evocation versus invocation.
Exactly. And now we're going to go to the Sanctum Sanctorum, which is the internal space of preparation that any one of us have to prepare. You know, it's the internal temple in order to proceed or with an evocation, an avocation, or a supplication appeal through prayers. You know, even a blessing, you need that movement. So this is what basically we're going to work with. And this is, you know, this is important part of the ritualistic procedure. With those prayers or those evocation and things like that, what you have basically is the repetition with intention, with the same words, with the same ritual, you create a wave, a vibration that is almost like an energy that is permanent, not present, but permanent, if you can, you know, if you will, on human consciousness that any one of us can access once we do and we repeat, we rehearse the same ritual. That's the reason this is a precept of the Mass. You know, when the a priest goes and says those same words that were repeated since the first Mass, since the Last Supper of Christ, the same words that he did in the same ritualistic procedure, the host becomes his body and the wine becomes his blood. You know, it's that's power in the ritualistic procedure. So that's the reason we, you know, that's what we call ritualistic masses. They are rituals, they're ceremonials. And the same thing with, you know, you don't go to pray, you know, or you don't go to a temple with a disrespective attitude, or, you know, you prepare yourself. You know, I was raised Catholic. So, you know, to go to have communion, you have to fast 2 hours before you go have communion. You know, you cannot just eat a meal and go to communion. You cannot go to the Mass full. You cannot drink before the Mass. If you are going to do something, participate of some type of ceremony, you cannot, you know, drink or do certain things. So all of this requires preparation. So when you observe those preparations before you do something, you are evoking ancient power that has been done through, you know, ages and come back to us. So this is the same precept of the Stella Codes. We follow the same procedures of the 12 years of apprenticeship on the temples of Egypt, Delphi, and Eleusis.
Mm-hmm. But we do it in the crash course version.
Yes, and, you know, it would take 12 years normally.
It's working.
What?
What you're doing is working, so it might be a crash course, but it's effective.
Well, it is effective in 1 year you have him, but you see, in 1 year you have him now with somebody, an initiate will have in 12 years in one of those temples of 4,000 years ago. But the thing is, the time is also speeding. So
yeah,
the time or the way we perceive time is not the same way a person that was born 3,000 years ago perceived time in that time. So our time is speeding. Our attention, you know, you are able, we are able, even though I must say, multitasking is not proper of human beings. We do it. But multitasking, I think, is a reminiscence of our multidimensional life. We think we can do it all. And because we are 3G, we screw it up. But and that time they just dedicated to that. Nowadays, the requirements to survive in a society we do, we develop this capability to see a scene on TV, you still on the phone, understand that, talk to something, eat at the same time, or imagine, oh my God, I have to do, laundry. I'm sorry, So you are able to absorb all of this. So right now, what we are, offering is 12 years condensed in 1 year. Is really a crash course. Now, is this over when the year ends? No. This is,
you're getting the tools here. You're not getting, it's something that you will continue to work on, to grow, to evolve. What we've done is essentially given you the toolbox and set you on the path. And this is a life path. As you grow, as you explore, as you develop different aspects of the codes, this is something that, it's not just you come, we give you an attunement, you get a certificate, which by the way I need to send out to people, and then that's it. It's not that way. It is a process. And we try to be very specific with people that are coming into the codes. It takes a year to do the thing. It's not for people who are just looking for a weekend mastery. It's not going to happen. We won't do that. What we will do is help you on the way, and we give what we call the personal mastery. That's going through the codes, but you're still going to be developing. You're still going to be learning based on those codes.
And you will see that we're like, for instance, the code that we have now, the Antares code, is a very powerful code because it will deal with your DNA. We'll deal with the entire internal spiral and the internal tree, which is our, you have the tree of life, which is a spiritual diagram of the universe outside, but you have a tree inside, which is the system of veins. You have the roots, you have the system of vein. What we're going to do, what we do with this code is touch the base of the cleansing of your hereditary tree. So we're going to try to clean up some residues, some phantom elements that are passed down through your ancestors now. And those are things that are basically fears, preconcepts that of experience that you did not necessarily have, but you inherited. And the reason being is when you finish this code, for one person to ascend, there are 13,800 points of DNA strands that have on the DNA, the 12 DNAs that have to be activated in order for you to ascend. The stellar code, starting from the beginning to the end, will activate by itself through the attunements at least 3,800 of it, which gives you a pretty good amount of detachment for the wheel of karma. Meaning you will have more free will to decide how you will experience your karma. The perfect thing for somebody to conquer those 13,800 points, and a human being, a soul, can come many times and reincarnate to try to activate one or two, three points. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, it's just like made a strange noise. I thought I was talking to myself.
I'm being quiet. In case if somebody also wants to talk, I just.
I don't know. Yeah, if somebody wants to talk, please interrupt and ask questions.
They got to jump in.
Yeah, I have to jump in. So what the stellar code, plain and simple, will do is activate 3,800, which will give you the conclusion of what we usually call Earth School, the Earth Ascension, 3,800 points on the on the DNA filaments. When you activate your DNA, it's not just activate the 12; you have to rebuild them. And, you know, they exist there in etheric materia, but you have to rebuild them. And how you rebuild this is through integration of energies, because you're going to build the body of it, you know. So those, as you build the bodies, the bodies of your DNA strands and activate the points, you acquire abilities and capabilities or aptitudes, if you will. You know, the aptitude of bilocation, the aptitude of, you know, having premonitory dreams, the aptitude to detach yourself from one situation, the aptitude to heal better. So those are aptitudes. And this is the process itself. So in Antares, and that's what I said is hardcore one, because the most intense dreams, and it's not really a comfortable code, but is a necessary one. That is where you start facing, you know, your demons, because they all will come out. On this code, they all will come out. You know, old traumas, old memories, even, you know, there's some people that report experience of people that were, you know, in the past and came back when they were doing the code, and it was like, what? This is creepy. It's like, well, it has to come out. You know, some of those facts and some of the fears, and they can come as dreams. And sometimes very nightmares, you know, you have to face it, because those bad elements, they, you know, bad elements, that means bad energies, bad thoughts, bad fluids, bad vibes, or, you know, figures, they have to come to consciousness, light of consciousness, in order to be released. So it's almost like you have what you call a blister, you know, has to come to the top, so, you know, in order to be popped and liberated and clean. So this is a process, and, you know, and I will not be tired to say, do all the exercise, do all the preparation, do the purification, use the apple juice, you know, be very liberal with the apple juice, because you need to be cleaned inside.
That's a very good thing.
You know, and then you really, really have, the apple juice will clean your system, your blood, the apple juice and the vinegar, the apple vinegar, clean basically the organs that you need the most to reprocess energy, which is your spleen and your liver. So it will clean up, and this is very important. Those two organs are very much important on the process of, and kidneys too, but to a certain extent, you know, and we're going to work with those too. But the kidneys, I say, because the kidneys are the filtration system of the blood, and we are going to work with your blood on that time. Bloodline. And the reason we say that this is a hardcore, because once you feel and once you really conclude a process of cleansing of your ancestral tree and rearrange the dharmic line, you are able now, because, you know, to live on yourself what is the one of the sayings of alchemy, you know, as above, so below, and, you know, vice versa. When you cleanse and you integrate and you reorganize your family tree or your tree line, a dharmic line of your ancestors, you are able to have open contact with your family of light, which is the family out there, the one that is with your essence, the family of light, not the family that you have on earth or you had on earth or your ancestors, but the ones that are up there, which is absolutely incredible to integrate the both, you know. It's absolutely incredible, and it's necessary. It's part of the process of ascension, the cleanse of the bloodline, the realignment, and the integration with your family of light. So, I talk too much.
No, you don't talk too much. That's why I'm listening.
The thing is we can probably go on for a long time.
I can go on forever.
Do you have any other specific questions on Antares?
Not until I read the e-book, and then I probably have a lot of them. But if you can just, provide a thumbnail sketch of outline, briefly of what it represents, then that would probably suffice for now. In specific.
Can you sum up
Sirius, and you can sum up Speaker, which I think she already did at the beginning of the teleconference. The divine feminine and
this is the first of the light warrior.
This is a different animal. If you may, and this is a different animal. This is the kick butt one.
Yeah, this is the first of the initiations
of the integration of the codes of Archangel Michael, which is, what you're going to do, what you're going to receive with this code is an integration, and the aptitudes that are proper of Michael's legion.
Okay.
They're two different types of, the attunements are all, you can lump them into attunements, but there's really two different types of initiations within the stellar codes, and there are four codes that deal with the angelic hosts, this being the first, the one that you are going to run into, and this is this initiation will be into Michael's legions.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and so, in answer to your question, I don't have anything specific to ask until I actually read it, and then it's probably won't be able to ask it then, but I'm looking forward to reading it and spending some time.
It'll take you a little while. This one's a long book. I'm not sure which is our longest, but this one's pretty long.
Well, as soon as you send it, I'll start reading it.
No, it should be in your inbox.
Okay, all right. I'll check it out.
Yeah, this is Archangel Michael is not the fluffy bunny that people say around there. We just remember that he's the first warrior. So Archangel Michael walks around with war boots. Combat boots.
Combat boots. Keep in mind the energy of Michael is very intense because one of his primary functions is God's warrior. Now there are lots of angels that fall under that, but he's kind of a general. And his it's not light, it's not fluffy. There are no rainbows and unicorns, and there's no beloveds. It's an intense energy. It's like more of the energy of the drill sergeant as opposed to the energy of the human resource, person who's trying to get you to come into the army.
Right. Big difference.
There is a big difference. I'm not saying this to scare anybody the point being is that this is a serious commitment that you make when your soul makes when it comes into this situation, and it's a powerful initiation, but it's a very important one.
Well, I know I'm here for a reason to do this, so I'm looking forward to learning it.
We'll look forward to hearing what you see after you have your attunement and initiation.
I'll let you know.
So, if you have no other questions, then what we'll go ahead and do is draw this to a close. Does anybody else have any questions out there? All right, I am going to guess that the silence means no.
Maybe
for it. The funny is, you go in and you see that there's a lot of people online and then nobody talks, as I think is wonderful. I feel like I'm talking to myself. It's not a good thing. Believe me, it's not a good thing.
So we always check the numbers afterwards, and it's like, wow, did you realize there's that many people? No, I didn't either.
Yeah, it's like that.
All right. Well, we'll wish everybody a very pleasant good evening.